excited now to welcome the Progressive Magazine's first and only sports columnist. Dave Zirin was named one of 50 visionaries who are changing our world. He writes about the politics of sports for the Progressive and is the nation's sports editor. He's the winner of Sport and Society and Northeastern University School of Journalism's Excellence in Sports Journalism Award. He is the host of the popular show Edge of Sports, and he has written too many books for me to tell you all of them, but The John Carlos Story, A People's History of Sports, and Brazil's Dance with the Devil, which he will be signing at the Haymarket table back here behind the stage right after this. He is here fresh from the Olympics in Rio. Please welcome Dave Zirin. From the Olympics in Rio, please welcome Dave Zirin.
Thank you so much. How y'all doing? All rise for the anthem. No, I'm just kidding. I just want to start, if I could, first give it up for Keith Ellison. My goodness, following him, I feel like I'm the lemon sorbet in between Keith Ellison and Jim Hightower. I'm here just to cleanse the collective past. Story here. True story. I was in a city. I don't want to name it. All right, it was Philadelphia. And I was walking into this, you know, very liberal community bookstore to do a talk for a book I wrote called What's My Name, Fool? And the cover of the book is a big Muhammad Ali face just going like this, like, ah, like a big Ali face. And I walked into this bookstore, this very left-wing bookstore, and I said, hey, I'm Dave Zirin. I'm here to do the talk for What's My Name, Fool? And the young man behind the counter looked at me and he said, but you're white. And I said, well, yeah, last I checked. And he said, but isn't that you on the cover of the book? And I had to say, no, that's not me, that's Muhammad Ali. And I'll never forget looking around the store and they had all these posters around and thinking, my goodness, this is supposed to be a resistance politics bookstore, and yet there is not the most basic familiarity with the most important draft resistor in the history of war. That's a problem. And I think far too often we write sports history out of our radical history. And we should not do that. We should claim that history, especially because right now in the United States, Colin Kaepernick is writing a new chapter in the history of sports and resistance. And as I will discuss, he is far from alone. Now, Colin Kaepernick, for those of you who have been living in Dick Cheney's bunker, he changed the sports world in August and our political landscape by saying two basic things. He said, I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag that oppresses black people and people of color. And then he said, there are bodies in the street and people are getting paid leave, talking about the police, and getting away with murder. Now, look, anytime an athlete has spoken out since the start of the Black Lives Matter movement against police violence, it's mattered. Whether you're talking about LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Paul, it's mattered. It matters because it amplifies people who are fighting in the streets. It matters because it gives people confidence. And most of all, it matters because it imposes the discussion on the mass of sports fans, white male sports fans, who otherwise are not paying attention to the fact that this is happening. I call it the puncturing of the privilege. It punctures the privilege and lets in that voice. That's why it's so important when athletes speak out. But Kaepernick, I mean, it's been on another level, such another level. I mean, my goodness, how do you know Colin Kaepernick matters? Because he has upset all the right people. Donald Trump said that Colin Kaepernick should find another country to live in. This is Donald Trump, who has spent the last year trashing this country, yet he's allowed to do that. But Colin Kaepernick is not allowed to have his own critique of the United States. Representative Steve King from Iowa, who, I'm sorry, I feel like he should always be announced or introduced as saying, like, representative and avowed white supremacist. Steve King from Iowa said that Colin Kaepernick's protest, and this is a quote, shows that he is sympathetic to ISIS. And in what surely was a must have been a very damaging blow to Colin Kaepernick's ego, supermodel Kate Upton said, "This is unacceptable. He should be proud to be an American." Look, anytime Donald Trump, Steve King, and Kate Upton are on one side, you know you're on the right side if you're on the other side. It says a lot about who you are by the company that you keep. Now, why has Colin Kaepernick's statement made such an impact? I would make the case that what he is doing stands in the tradition of Muhammad Ali more than it stands in the tradition of the other athletes who've spoken out. Now, it's been very brave when LeBron James, when players in the WNBA, when others have spoken out over the last several years. It's been so welcome after decades when athletes said nothing other than buy my products, or Michael Jordan saying Republicans buy sneakers too. It's been wonderful that more athletes have something to say, but most of what they have said has been about peace, has been about bringing people together for the cause of peace. Colin Kaepernick is calling for justice, not peace. And he's saying, no justice, no peace. And that's in the best tradition of Muhammad Ali, because Muhammad Ali didn't say, we need to bring together people who are against the war in Vietnam and people who are for the war in Vietnam and build a bridge so they can get along. That's not what Muhammad Ali did. He said, the war is wrong, and I'm on the side of the people who are unafraid to say that. And that's what Colin Kaepernick is doing. And the irony is that a whole host of my colleagues in the sports writing profession, sports writers who the great Hunter S. Thompson once described as masturbating chimpanzees, not a lot has changed, but these same people who were praising Muhammad Ali on his death are, without irony, now criticizing Colin Kaepernick. But it's not just the right-wingers and the frothing sports columnist chimpanzees or Kate Upton who are bashing Colin Kaepernick. The most common response from the commissioner of the NFL to New York Times columnist David Brooks to a host of other Beltway liberals, the kind of people who would have opposed Bob La Follette, trust me, are saying that they agree with what Kaepernick is fighting for, but they disagree with his methods. And I swear, when I heard that, and these are direct quotes, I could list you the people, they've said that exact thing. I like what he's saying, but I don't agree with his methods. You shouldn't protest the anthem, I don't agree with his methods. And it's so crazy because people like David Brooks unashamedly quote Dr. Martin Luther King to justify why Colin Kaepernick shouldn't speak. It's like barely, it's almost like in the racist handbook, that if you're going to tell somebody who is young, black, and unafraid to be quiet, you quote King as a method to do that, as if Dr. Martin Luther King wasn't not only a civil rights leader, but the number one protester in this country over the last 100 years, as if he wasn't arrested, I believe it's 29 times over the course of his political life. And when they tell Colin Kaepernick, I agree with what you're doing, but I don't agree with your methods, the best response actually comes from Dr. King's letter from a Birmingham jail, where he wrote, "I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says," now listen to this, "I agree with you in the goal you seek, but I cannot agree with your methods. Who paternalistically believes he can set the timetable for another person's freedom, who lives by a mythical concept of time, and who constantly advises the Negro to wait for a more convenient season." Look, the season is now. And how do we know the season is now? It's not because we're here at Fightin' Bob. It's not because Colin Kaepernick took his stand. It's because of the response on sports teams, which are often the most conservative part of any community or institution. But you look around the country right now, what do you see? You see high school football players in Seattle taking a knee. You see high school volleyball players in South Minneapolis taking a knee. You see middle schoolers in Prince George's County, Maryland taking a knee. From Seattle to Oakland to the deep south to the north, you see young people taking a knee. And you know what else you see? You see NFL players taking a knee. And there's going to be another demonstration this Monday night. It's just unbelievable to even say this as a sentence. There's going to be a demonstration during the anthem at Monday Night Football. It's like, what? What world am I living in? And it's the Philadelphia Eagles. And they're going to be taking a knee. And what they said, this is what's so remarkable, is that one of the players said, he said, it's not just about police violence, it's economic justice for the communities from which we come. It's like the genie is out of the bottle. It cannot be stopped. And I was particularly moved by soccer player Megan Rapinoe, who took a knee. And took a knee while wearing the USA on her shirt as the US team played Thailand. And she took a knee because, as she said there's just a gap between the values that the flag represents and the actuality of what it's like to live in this country. And as long as that gap exists, I will take a knee. And I'll tell you, as someone who loves history, as someone who was a history major, because my professor said to me, when you're on the unemployment line, you can explain to everyone else why you're there, all the reasons. You know, you can break it down for people as you're unemployed. But I'm a proud history major of that fraternity. I love the fact that when moments like this happens, it revives the history of athletes who've stood up for social justice, who've used this hyper-exalted brought to you by Nike platform to speak out. And so in the media recently, we've seen interviews with people like Tommy Smith and John Carlos, who are being brought from the 1968 Olympics, who raised their fists, and they're being brought forward not only to speak about their experiences in 68, but about why what they were fighting for then is still the fight today, and why the struggle on the playing field actually matters and who it can reach. And I'll tell you, one of the things that's really inspired me has been the reemergence of someone by the name of Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Now, if you don't know that name, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf played for the Denver Nuggets in 1996. And he made the private decision then that he was not going to stand for the national anthem. He came to this conclusion on his own. He was a man of very devout Muslim faith, but his influence for doing it was actually this elderly Jewish dude by the name of Noam Chomsky, who Rauf was reading and said, I just can't stand for this flag. And for me, this was a huge deal. 1996, I'm in college, I'm, you know, watching what's happening. ESPN every night was like, Rauf spits on the flag, booyah, din-in-it, din-in-it. And Rauf found himself fined, he found himself suspended, and he found himself out of the NBA. And I can tell you this, I've been a sports writer, a political sports writer, if you will, for about 13 years, and not a year has gone by when I haven't made an effort to interview Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. And this year is the first year he ever said yes, because he felt inspired by what's happening with Colin Kaepernick. He felt like it was his turn to speak. And I've been waiting to hear what Rauf had to say, and I was not disappointed. And I want to end my remarks by just reading to you what Rauf said to me about why he stood up then and about how why it was so important to do so then and why it's important to do so now. This is what Rauf said to me. He said, I realized at a young age that I had to break these chains because I felt that there were things I wanted to say, things that I saw that were unjust. And I said to myself, why am I afraid? Why am I a coward? Why can't I communicate this? Why can't I say this? And I had to slowly begin a process of doing that, which eventually led to protesting the flag. I mention this all the time because I love this woman and her writings. Maybe you've heard of her. She's this Indian political activist named Arundhati Roy. And I was like, yeah, I've heard of Arundhati Roy. And Arundhati Roy, she said, once you see something, you can't unsee it. So to be silent, to say nothing, is just as political an act as speaking out. Either way, you're accountable. So we're not saved through our silence, actually. The politics of silence is a negative one. We're still accountable. And I said, I don't want to be on that side of history. I want to stand up for principles, and I want to live and die with a free conscience and a free soul, whether anybody likes it or not. I'm not always going to be right. I'm not always going to be eloquent, but I'm always going to try my best to stand up for what's right and what is just, whether people like it or not. And so I began that process, and that's where it's taken me, and I don't have any regrets. Despite all of the backlash and all of the setbacks, like one brother said, the setback ain't nothing but a setup to a comeback. Look, what's coming back is the political power of athletes. And in this awful campaign season, it could not have happened soon enough. Thank you very much to everybody, and thank you for fighting Bob.
Dave Zirin, ladies and gentlemen, a regular columnist for the Progressive magazine, and also has a brand new book out, and he's going to be back here at the Haymarket Books table signing copies for a while, so you can check that out later.